You're listening to The Drew Marshall Show, Canada's most listened to spiritual talkback program.
The heart is a blue, shoots up through the stony ground. There's no room, no space to rent in this town. You're out of luck, and the reason that you had to care, the traffic is stuck. You're not moving anywhere. You thought you found a friend to take you out of this place. Someone you could lend a hand in return for grace. It's a beautiful day.
And that's one thing that is not a reality up here in Toronto right now. It is not a beautiful day. Matter of fact, we hadn't had many beautiful days over the last couple of months. But hey, that's Canada. We are living in the Arctic tundra. Snowmobiles in the streets and moose. Got to watch out for those moose, eh, when you're driving around the snowmobiles. Folks, thanks for tuning in. You are listening to The Drew Marshall Show. Lots of things to talk about today, so let's move along, shall we? Joining us all the way down from the United States is Candace Cameron Bure. Do you know that name? Let's see, what shadows does she live under? She lives under the shadow of DJ off of Full House. She lives under the shadow of sister of Kirk Cameron. I'm wondering if that's a good shadow to live under. Are you okay with that, Candace?
Yeah, definitely.
Who do you think's more famous? Come on, let's cut to the chase here. Who's more famous, you or your brother?
My brother.
You think so?
Without a doubt.
But you are 100% better looking than he is.
Why, thank you.
I like to suck up with my guests right off the bat. And actually, my co-host and I were just talking about older pictures of you and newer pictures of you. You're like a good wine. I'm not saying you're old or anything. I just think you're getting better looking. It's tremendous.
Why, thank you.
Especially after three kitties.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay, now that I've totally thrown you off. How you doing?
I'm waiting for the other shadow.
Did I say three shadows?
I don't know if you said three, but there's another one.
Is
I'm
there?
Waiting for it.
What is the other shadow? Do you have one you want to tell me about?
Being in Canada.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Valerie Bure. How do you like that? How'd you hook up with him? Oh, no, we'll talk about the love story later.
Okay.
All right. So, listen, first thing I want to ask you is your mom still running the talent agency?
No, she's not. She closed up shop when she had a bunch of grandchildren.
Oh, okay.
And wanted to devote more time to them.
Well, good.
You know my brother has six.
I do know that, yep.
And I have three, and my sisters have kids also, so,
Man,
yeah.
You guys are like a rabbit colony down there.
I know.
And your sisters, what are they doing in life? Bridget and Melissa, what are they up to?
Yeah. My sister Bridget is a stay-at-home mom. She has two kids and is pregnant with her third, and she's real actively involved in her church. And my other sister, Melissa, who lives close by to us, is married and pregnant with her first, and she's just actually stopping working so she can stay home and raise their baby, too.
Good for you. Good for you, guy. What a neat family. It seems like you have the all-American family, you know, the dream. The dream. How often do you get a chance to catch up with Big Brother?
Well, quite a bit. We talk on the phone a lot. Email's always great. And this year, since we're in Los Angeles because my husband signed with the Kings.
Yeah.
Although he hasn't played a game this season, but
why hasn't he played?
He got injured the last preseason game, and he had back surgery about 8 weeks ago, and had hip surgery a week and a half ago.
You see, LA is so far away from us, and to be honest, they've never quite recovered from Wayne Gretzky days that we just don't know these things, right? So,
well, it was because I'm from LA. It was fun for us to sign here, just so we could be around my family.
Was that negotiated so that you could move back to that neck of the woods?
Well, he was a free agent this year, so we got to choose where he wanted to sign, and LA was at the top of our list.
Right.
Just for that reason.
Okay.
It hasn't quite worked out the way we were hoping since he's not playing, but
right.
It's great that I get to be around my family, and they're also a great help during this time, too.
So do you think you folks will settle there as opposed to Florida?
No, we're actually settling in Florida. We preferred in Florida. We kept our house there, and we love it there. And I love my family and all, but we really found our niche, and our home and our community and our church and our kids' school in Florida. Hmm. We just love it.
Gary Berghoff did the same thing. Do you know who that is, Gary Berghoff?
I don't.
He played Radar on MASH.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I spoke to him last year, I think, and he moved from the West Coast, California, to Florida, and he just loves it there.
Yeah. I know, it sounds kind of funny, because I'm like, yeah, we're going to go retire in Florida, and we're, you know, 30 years old.
Along with all the Canadian snow angels, the geriatric mobiles, and everything else.
Right.
Oh, man. All right, now, growing up with Big Brother, was he a jerk, like, as a brother? Like, you know, most older brothers are jerks, right?
Yeah, no.
Did he give
really
you wedgies
wasn't.
And stuff? And
sometimes he sat on us and would, like, pound our chest and you know, pretend like he was going to spit on our face and let it drop.
Oh, I remember that.
It was only once in a while. He was a pretty good brother.
But you had a whole bunch of weird pets in the house, too. I understand you had snakes and a tarantula.
Yeah, we did have weird pets because my brother and my mom, they're all allergic to cat fur and dog fur, so
oh,
I guess that was the next best choice, snakes and tarantulas. So that also would include rats and chickens and all that because that's what you'd have
to get to feed them. Yeah. You open up the freezer to get some ice cream and there's a bunch of rats, right?
Yep.
That's what our freezer is like at home. My son has a boa constrictor.
Yeah.
And that's what happens.
We had hamsters, too, and it was a sad day when we came home and counted them and one of the babies was missing.
Oh, that's torturous. Well, and now I understand you're still a bit of a pet fiend, but you actually have pets that have hair on them now. You have a couple of Rotties and a Cocker Spaniel, is that right?
Yeah, we do. We have one Rottie.
Okay.
We had two, but one passed away.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to bring that up. My apologies.
No, it's okay. She was an awesome doggie. And a Cocker Spaniel.
Okay.
So we have nice normal pets.
Are you worried about the I don't know, the Cocker Spaniel going missing like the hamsters did, having a Rottie as well?
No. You know, she has, like, I don't know if it's the little dog syndrome or big dog syndrome, whatever you call it, but, you know, she thinks, the small dog thinks that she's bigger, more powerful than the Rottweiler.
Right.
So she's the protector of the family.
Right, right. Well, it's like short guy syndrome. A lot of short guys are like that, eh? They get the attitude going and...
Right. So I'm not worried about her.
All right. Well, tell me about the kids. Natasha, is it Lev? Is that how you pronounce it?
Uh-huh, Lev.
And Maxim.
Maxime. Yeah, we just call him Max.
Okay, that'll work.
It's the whole Russian way, you know, to say their names and spell them and all that.
And you're okay with three Russian names?
Yes. I always loved Russian names. It was a funny thing because I loved the name Natasha when I was young, and I always thought, I want to name my girl that, but who would probably want to use that name unless I married a Russian guy?
Oh, so that was the plan. You were targeting
a
Russian guy.
Yes, I was.
Right.
Yeah. Hey, my kids are great. Natasha is 7.5, and Lev is turning 6 in 2 weeks, and Max just turned 4, and they're all in school, and you know, I just love being a mom. It's awesome.
Who's the biggest challenge? I mean, other than Valerie, who's the biggest challenge?
My daughter, Natasha.
Yeah?
She's our strong-willed child and has given me quite a few gray hairs, and I listen to, you know, Dr. Dobson a lot. And do as much reading as I can.
Yes.
And take a lot of advice from the Pearls. I don't know if you've heard of them, Debbie and Michael Pearl. They're incredible. And anyway, she's my biggest challenge, and Lev is he's such a great kid, and he's just so sweet and sensitive, and, you know, comes home every day with, you know, he's student of the day, student of the month, gets the, you know, best grades, and everybody just loves him. And then my little Max is just, he's a crazy clown.
He's nuts.
Yeah, he's just nuts and insane. And
right. So you've got sort of stereotypical kids here. You've got the oldest kid who's the assertive one. You've got the middle child syndrome thing going on, and you got Max who's the who's the whack job,
wow.
Right?
Yeah. Yep. Exactly.
Oh man. Well, Lisa Welch, I was speaking to her a little while ago, and she has, you know, she's been growing up with a young child who's ADD, and she's very open about talking about, you know, the struggles of raising children. It's a tough deal.
It is.
I never found the manual how to do it right, but
yeah, I don't think there really is one.
No. Well, you started as a youngin, age five, you started in the industry with commercials, and then I guess you got some roles on St. Elsewhere, Growing Pains, Who's the Boss, all that kind of stuff.
Right.
Then at 10, you landed the role of Donna Jo Tanner.
I did.
1986, and then 8 years later, the 1994 Full House comes to an end. Was that weird for you when it came to an end?
It was sad because I'd been working with all of these people for 8 years, and it was, you know, my childhood growing up from 10 to 18. Those are such formative years, and so it was a sad day. But at the same time, I was really excited to do other things and move on. And I'd met Val that last year we were doing Full House, so I was excited to be able to travel and visit with him more and kind of build our relationship. So it, you know, I had a lot of things to look forward to when it ended.
All right. I guess being in love at the end of the series is a beautiful thing to move on towards. How old were you?
I was 18.
18. So you're goo-goo over this guy at 18 years old.
Right.
Right? So you're off in la-la lands. Like, who cares if Full House ends?
Pretty much.
I'm in love, man. So now you've done a bunch of TV movies like She Cried No, Night Scream. You guest starred on Sybil, Boy Meets World, and landed the, you know, the big role in John Hughes, Some Kind of Wonderful. Of all the TV movies you've done, which one did you resonate with the most, or which one are you the most proud? Like, which one do you go, whoa, that one still really kind of hits home for me?
You know, the one that I really... Okay, I'm trying to think of a name.
Oh, you're kidding.
They all have the same names, you know, these TV movies.
Yeah.
It's like everything's happened to me in all, you know, abused, raped,
right,
killed,
right.
Whatever.
Yeah.
But I think it was She Cried No. I think it's that one. Yeah, She Cried No. And that was the one where I played a girl that was date raped in college. And I was really proud of that one. I was proud of myself for the acting in that, and that it had a really big impact in high schools and colleges, because they still show that film a lot today, to just look out for the signs or things that can happen. And we got a lot of feedback from that one, but I thought that was the coolest one.
I thought you might have said Night Scream because you played a character called Drew, you know.
It was Night Scream.
That's right. That's what I was thinking. But you were also the executive producer of that one, weren't you?
Yeah.
Or some kind of big wig?
I was.
Why'd you hesitate with that?
I got paid a dollar, you know, to be the producer of it.
Yeah, okay.
It's all about getting the credit, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, getting that. And the chair, those chairs, right? With the names and the executive producers.
Yes.
The fold-up
yes.
chairs.
I think I was on the set, and I was trying to convince the director that I really was a producer on that film.
I know how that stuff works. Oh, man. All right, well, you've had the opportunity to work with a bunch of talented actors, Tom Hanks, Sally Field, John Goodman. You even worked with Jennifer Aniston back at Camp Cucamonga.
I did.
Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah.
Do you even remember, like, those whole days of Jennifer Aniston?
I do, but you know what's funny is when... You know, she wasn't a big celebrity when we were doing that movie, and all the years had passed, and then she became very famous, and I didn't even know. It was like one day I went back and looked at that movie or saw something, and I was like, hey, that's Jennifer Aniston. I didn't even realize that was her.
Oh, man. Who do you want to work with in the future, right? That's a typical interview question. You're a fairly amazing actor yourself, and people are... I've read reports and raves about you, and I think people are probably drooling, waiting for you to come back into the industry. So when
seriously?
You, yeah, I have.
You're making me sound so great.
Well, you are, from what I understand. I don't know. Let me get your husband on the phone. But who do you want to, like, if you were to work again with somebody, is there somebody at the top of the list you'd like to work with?
You know, honestly, I have not even thought about that question in ages, and I don't have an answer for you.
Okay.
I don't even know.
All right. I think you and Kathy Lee Gifford would make a good... mother-daughter team.
Would.
A great mother-daughter team.
I like her. She's such a nice lady.
She is. She's a class act.
Yep.
So do you get asked constantly about Mary-Kate and Ashley?
Surprisingly, no.
Okay.
I'll get a couple questions, but not that much.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to ask you anything. But, okay. Like nothing. Do you hang with the old crew at all? Bob Saget?
I do. We normally live in Florida. This year is not typical for us being in LA, so I've been able to see everyone more than normal. But usually we come back to LA in the summertime, so we'll all get together for a big dinner, the whole entire cast.
Right.
And so at least once a year. But then, you know, I talk to I'm pretty close with Bob and Dave, and so I talk to them on the phone and email them a lot.
Did you find Bob funny on America's Funniest Videos? I mean, seriously.
At times?
At times
I did, but you know, when you know him in person, or, you know, and you know his humor and his, it ended up being funnier to me than it probably would to some of the other viewers, because
right.
I know a lot of it was cheesy, too.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I would laugh at it, but I could see he's doing, like, all these little inside jokes that no one has a clue about.
Right.
So
he was playing, he was playing to the inside circle then,
yeah.
I guess. Because it seemed to me like he was trying to get out of his contract, but just by being not funny. You know, I was like, okay, buddy, you're not funny. I know, I'm trying to get out of my contract. Anyway. Do you have any embarrassing moments on the set? I love hearing about that kind of stuff. But give me some dirt, you know, something that somebody came out and did the first scene with their fly open or, I don't know, whatever.
Well, I mean, we had so many funny moments just because of Bob and Dave being comedians on the show.
That's what I was thinking, yeah.
And I'm fumbling over my words because they were quite foul at times.
Right.
They should not have been in front of young children.
Yes.
But
should have been locked up.
As a mom now, I'd have a different point of view. But as a child being there, I just thought it was the coolest thing in the world.
Right.
And they did a bunch of. One night it was late. I was doing a scene and I was with a boyfriend and they thought something, you know, inappropriate was going on. So they come up to break the date.
Oh, was this in the van?
This is in the van.
Right. You know what? I honestly.
How do you know that?
I know. Don't even ask that. I think I saw that last week, that episode or something. Like,
You're scaring me now.
Oh, man, I know. I'm not a stalker fan or something, but anyway, yeah.
So we're taping it and we just, like, can't get the scene. And it's the 10th time we're doing it and everyone's really giddy. It's, you know, probably close to 10 o'clock at night. And the three guys come around from the van. They have tuxedos on.
Yes.
And they come around the van, and on all their pants are down around their ankles.
Nice. Nice.
Yeah, they had shorts on, you know, boxer shorts on and stuff. But it was quite funny, and everyone was, you know, laughing hard, and the directors get mad. And
you know, I feel the need to explain why I know that scene, okay? Like, I'm actually sweating here. I'm thinking people are... So, well, I have a 13-year-old daughter, okay? And so she loves the show. She watches it. And by the way, she said to say hi, okay? So
hi.
Her name's Jessica. And we were watching this, and I stayed in the room and watched it with her because quite often I'll sit down and watch what they're watching so I know what they're watching and
right.
know what they shouldn't watch. And I saw this scene, and I got to thinking about her growing up and getting into the dating years. And I thought the way those guys handled it was pretty calm compared to the way I would have handled it. So that's what I was doing. I was sitting there, you know, imagining my daughter in that situation, that sort of thing. So.
Right.
Anyway, now that we've explained that, tell me about the crew, Candace. And I'll just remind our listeners, we're on the phone with Candace Cameron Bure. Is that how you pronounce your last name?
Yep.
Good.
You got it right.
Canadians should know that. And Candace Cameron, of course, played DJ in Full House, and she's married to Valerie Bure, and she's related to Kirk Cameron, and yada, yada, yada. But tell me about the crew.
Well, the crew is a project we've been working on for quite a while. When I had my first child, I started paying attention to children's programming and noticed that there was a lot of stuff on that I thought was inappropriate that I didn't want my kids watching, just with the violence. And I thought, if I'm going to have my children in front of the TV for any amount of time, I would like to have them learn something educational, something that would benefit them. And my girlfriend had this idea for The Crew, which stands for Kids Rescuing Everyone Worldwide. And it was basically to have a really fun show for kids, just a normal, you know, half an hour format. But it would almost be like Spy Kids, but with a purpose, that they would be being taught safety lessons. So The Crew, the first episode that we did, is teaching the kids about stranger safety.
Mm-hmm.
So it has topics like internet safety, having a password with your parents. If anyone ever tried to come and say, hey, you know, your mom told me to come and pick you up. I know you don't know me, but something happened. Let me take you. That you would say, hey, what's the password? Because you and your parents, you know, your parents would give that person the password
right.
if they
right.
ever had someone pick them up. And stuff like that, it would just be a fun show and that kids would enjoy and they would learn stuff, and we have a lot of different topics. And It was bought by a distributor called Artistry, and we're working with them right now to actually get funding for 4 more episodes that we can package them together and have this as a series of videos.
Okay, good. So now, is this available now? Like, can someone go on Amazon and buy it or whatever?
Yes, you can. You can go to Amazon.com and buy the first episode, which is on strangers. And just, be on the lookout for more, though. We're hoping to improve upon it and, get a lot more done with a lot more topics. Things take a while when you do them by yourself.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Candace Cameron Bure is involved with so many charities. I was reading how many, just ridiculous here, like Superwoman. Which one are you the most passionate about? Maybe because it's personally affected you or the life of someone you know?
Wow. There are so many.
But, some charities you're involved with because it's the right thing to do or it's a nice thing to do or someone put the hit on you or whatever.
Right.
But others, you had to get involved because of some sort of personal connection with it.
Well, one charity that I have been involved with since I was young was the Starlight Foundation and other organizations that include Make-A-Wish Foundation. And we would always have kids that would come to the show that were ill, and it was their wish to meet the cast or meet, just watch a taping of the episode of Full House. And
right.
It always meant a lot to me to be able to, put the smile on their face. And now as an adult, our son Lev has gone through some problems this past year. He's had 3 surgeries. He had a tumor basically in his ear, and he's fine now. And
wow, that must have been scary.
It was a very trying year.
Wow.
And but that particular those organizations mean even more to me as an adult because I understand now how I would do anything for my children, anything. So to have an organization like that can, grant your child a wish or just really change their life or give them the motivation to hang in there and stay strong is incredible.
Hmm. Excellent. Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Okay, just checking. Because, again, I read the list of charities. I thought, oh, man, I can't talk about all these charities. We'll be here for an hour and a half. That's just how much you're involved in charitable work. So good on you for doing all that. It's got to be tough making sure you can balance time as a wife and as a mom and as a celebrity giving back to the community,
Yeah.
Let's talk about the God stuff, okay? You ready for the God stuff?
Yep, I'm ready.
All right. You first surrendered your life to Christ when you were 12.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about that. Give us the concise story.
We didn't grow up in a Christian home. My parents didn't talk about religion at all. And when I was 12, my parents had gotten separated. They were going through some marital problems. And that's when a friend of theirs had invited them to church. So at 12 years old, it was the first time I stepped into the doors of a church and not really ever hearing about God or saying that word. And it was all quite new to me, and I thought it was really weird. But there was a part of me that really wanted to know more about it because I could see that the people in the church had something special, and they were very friendly and loving, and my parents were starting to work things out. My mom was a lot happier now going to church and that my dad was going, and they were able to, resolve their problems. And that's what, at a Sunday service, I said, hey, I want what all these people have. It's Jesus, and I want a personal relationship with him. So I asked him into my heart. And 12, that's the concise story.
Sure, well, I appreciate that. Because I'm sure over the years you've been asked so many times about the, the God story. I read somewhere that, I think it might have been on your website, there's a quote from you that says, I saw how happy my mom, brother, and sister were. Your dad wasn't buying into the Jesus stuff?
Nope, not at that time. And to be honest with you, is an amazing thing. About 2 weeks ago, my dad was baptized.
Oh, really?
By my brother.
Really?
Yeah, it was just an amazing day. And it's been a really, really long journey for my dad. And he's a guy that has struggled with, evolution, and he's a science man and likes that tangible proof.
Sure.
So my dad is a believer now, but yeah, at that time my dad, I think, was going to church because he wanted to work it out with my mom. That was very important, but he just wasn't buying into just God and having faith, that was a difficult thing for him.
I wonder if that would be part of the reason why Kirk is who he is spiritually and how, I mean, he's a high driver spiritually, right? He's just very spiritually intense and analytical and wanting to have the answers. And I mean, that's what his whole thing is about these days. And I wonder if that's maybe part of the reason that it kind of turned him in or drove him in that direction was this father of his who really was searching for the, wanted the hard proof, man.
Yeah, it's a good question for my brother.
Yeah.
I should ask him because I don't even know that answer, but it definitely could be a contributing factor.
On your website bio, you claim that it wasn't until a few years ago that you really found out what being Christian was all about.
Yep.
Can you pull that one apart for us?
Yeah, I was, once I got married and even through my teenage years, and then my early 20s, I called myself a Christian the whole time. But I wasn't going to church, I wasn't reading my Bible, and I wasn't doing anything as a Christian or what Christians normally do. And my sister-in-law gave me the book Left Behind. I love to read, so I said, yeah, I would love to read this book, and I read it. And one of the at the beginning of this book, for those who haven't read it, the rapture has occurred. Christ comes, takes his people, and then the rest are left behind. Non-believers are left behind. And there's was a character in the book, Pastor Bruce Barnes, that was left behind. And I couldn't understand how a pastor could be left behind.
Oh, I could. Sorry, I'm saying that because I used to be a pastor. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, this is out of my own ignorance. I just thought that's absolutely crazy. And then in the book, the pastor goes on to explain why he knows why he was left behind, and that's because he basically knew everything that the Bible said, but he wasn't living the life. He wasn't walking the walk. And after I finished that book, that really resonated with me and really got me thinking because I thought, you know what, I'm calling myself a Christian, but I'm not even going to church. I'm not reading my Bible. I'm not walking the walk at all. So does that mean that if Christ comes back right now, I'm going to be left behind? And it started the whole process for me of, you know what, I need to understand, and I want answers, and I don't want to be left behind. I want to know that I'm going to heaven. Does it, just because I asked Jesus into my heart at 12, does that mean I'm safe forever and going to be in heaven, still living my life the way I want to, or is there other things that I need to do or things that I need to change? And it just drove me to find the answers.
Hmm.
And that's when my brother gave me the book, The Way of the Master. And
that's Ray Comfort's book, is that?
Ray Comfort's book,
right.
Yep. And this was at the beginning stages before he even had his ministry because he was just so excited and said, Candace, you have to read this book. This book has just changed my life and my understanding of the whole gospel message. And I read that book, and it was true. For the first time, I understood the gospel message in terms of I always thought while I was growing up that I was going to go get into heaven because I asked God into my heart and because I thought I was a good person. By the world standard, hey, I am a good person. I do charitable work. I try to be nice to people. I was raised to be well-mannered, this and that, and, you know, I'm not, you know, a druggie. I haven't lost all my money. I haven't, you know, been thrown in jail, all these things. So when I compared myself to a lot of other worse people than me, I said, hey, I'm great, and that was really the basis why I thought I was going to be in heaven when I died.
Right.
Not understanding that God has a whole different standard by which he's going to judge every one of us. He doesn't judge us by the world standard. He judges us by his standard, and that standard is the Ten Commandments. So when I looked at the Ten Commandments and held myself up to them, I saw that I'd broken all the commandments. I've lied. I haven't always put God first in my life. I've used his name in vain. I've coveted. I haven't always honored my mother and father. I mean, I can go through the whole list. I saw that I'd broken them, so I said, if God's going to judge me by this standard, I'm guilty. I don't measure up to that, so that means I wouldn't be going to heaven then. Then the light bulb went on, and I truly understood why Christ died on the cross for me. And I said, oh, I can't measure up. I won't ever measure up. There's nothing I can do to measure up God's standard. But God sacrificed Christ on the cross while all of my sin was heaped upon him. and then rose from the grave. I broke God's law, but Jesus paid my fine. And from then on, I got it. And my life changed from that very moment.
Candace, when you say your life changed from that moment on, it sort of gives, and with what you just said before that, it sort of gives us the impression that you don't screw up anymore.
Yeah, absolutely not. So, I mean... That, I mean,
let's talk about your screw ups. No, I'm kidding.
No, it doesn't mean from that moment on, I all of a sudden became a perfect person. Absolutely not. I still struggle. I still sin today. But the difference now is knowing when I sin and what's wrong and going back and either in repenting from it, fixing it, you know,
eventually. I mean, are you talking about you sin, oh, you feel bad, you repent right away, or are there some sins you like to hang on to? Because I think every follower of Christ has what I call our favorite sins, and we keep going back to them inevitably here and there. Some, eventually, we go back to them less and less and less if
right.
The Holy Spirit is really rocking in our life, I guess, right? The more we surrender, the more we submit.
Yeah, it's true. And there's still things that I struggle with to this day that, like you said, they're my, you know, my comfort things, or, you know, it's the first thing that comes back to me when I'm on fire for God, when I know that he's working in my life, that because of me, you know, people are seeing God, or just from hearing my testimony, not that
sure.
I take any credit for that.
Right, right, right.
But when God is using me, it's the first thing that jumps right back, that my old sin that I know can get me, come, you know, pops up into my face, and then it's a struggle and a battle constantly. And I mean, there are things I don't think that I know that I'll struggle with for the rest of my life, but it's ultimately when it comes down to it, I say, what's more important? Is my relationship with God more important and pleasing him more important? Or is this sin? And it's still not always an easy decision when you're faced with it and you want to do it.
Right.
But it's the very question that I have to keep asking myself, who's really Lord of my life?
Well, Candace, to me, it seems like God has had his hand on your life right from the beginning in some kind of weird, spooky, supernatural way. Oh. Because you didn't end up one of those whacked-out childhood stars. You don't have... old pictures of you splashed all over the internet, and I look for them. And I, no, you know what I mean? I mean, I didn't, hold on, let me just rephrase that. In doing research on you, I was trying to find out, you know, kind of where you've been,
right.
And where, you know, what kind of a life have you had?
Right.
And it really, I mean, you come up clean. I mean, you're obviously not perfect, I'm not saying that, but it seems like God has had his hand on your life. Does that make any sense?
It absolutely does. You know, my mom and I were just talking the other day about that very thing, and she said, I don't understand it, because there's plenty of other people, kids in the industry, that we've grown up around and together, and my mom's going, what happened? Why didn't they come out okay and got involved and messed up and stuff? But you guys did. And she goes, you know, I don't feel like I really did something so special with you guys. Your dad and I had our fair share of problems. We weren't perfect parents. You weren't really raised in a Christian home. So why have we all kind of come out on the end? And I mean, the only thing we can do is just point to God. I mean, it was just God's hand from the start. Is, I don't know what he wanted for our lives, but I know what you mean. And sometimes it just baffles us.
Yeah. You know, a person I would love to interview would be your father. Knowing this journey, knowing that he has lived a life of skepticism and has recently sort of fully surrendered and said, you know what, I want to get baptized. Let's make this thing happen. Let's embrace it. Man, I mean, those are the kind of journeys I love hearing. Because I was actually born with the spiritual gift of pessimism. I don't know if you can find a chapter and verse for that. But so I resonate with that.
Yeah.
Now, talking about your mom... Tell us about this recent trip to Africa you went on. She went with you.
She did. Well, my mom has been on several African trips in the last few years, and she's gone with a great organization called the Children's Hunger Fund. And she always comes back with these amazing pictures and these great God stories, and it's amazing. So I had a pastor friend call me to get a hold of my mom. He wanted to ask her to join their team to go to Africa. And I was like, hey, can I go too? So they said, sure. I'm like, just what you need, some chick from TV going to Africa with you.
Yeah.
So, no, they were excited, and there was a team of nine of us that went to Ghana, Africa, and we went up into a little village named Saboba that, you know, basically it's nothing. It's just a bunch of mud huts around, and we were able to hold a vacation Bible school for the kids. We had about 300 kids there, and through the week, and our pastor, you know, held conferences for the neighboring villages to, you know, teach them how to share the gospel, and gave them materials to use. And we had a doctor and a dentist, and they, you know, performed medical procedures for the people. And it was so amazing. And I mean, everyone says that, I think, when they go on a missions trip, and especially to, a different part of the world that is nothing like America, and you
sure.
come back and you appreciate everything you have,
you had the opportunity to go with someone who's in your family, and sharing that experience with someone is totally worth it, because when you go by yourself and then you come back and you show the pictures, like showing the pictures of Grand Canyon, it doesn't
right.
show that you can't really get the depth of it. And yet, when you go with somebody else, you come back, you share those experiences for the rest of, like, it's, there's a connection there, you know what I mean? Because they get
yeah.
it.
Absolutely. My mom, I mean, I understood what my mom felt probably more than me at that time, because she'd gone so many times by herself, or, you know, with a group,
right.
no family members. And she was so excited that the two of us went together just for that reason. She's like, now you know what I'm talking about. And I'm like, yes, absolutely.
Sure.
And it was amazing. I mean, I would love to do and want to do missionary trips at least once a year, and Val's really excited and wants to do one too, and I think we're gonna focus on Russia, just because my husband is Russian, and there's such a need over there, and I've got to brush up on the old language.
Yeah. Well, you know, I understand you survived on that trip basically because of your mother's cookies, and I'm just telling you, I want the recipe, okay?
Okay, you can't have the recipe.
Why not? Is that like
a
family
secret?
Oh, come on.
Total secret family recipe.
Oh, man. It reminds me of that old, there was an old Calgon commercial. Ancient Chinese secret, huh? Anyway, okay. I was looking at pictures of you on the Africa trip, and you actually look like you're in pretty decent shape there, young lady. Is that just part of being married to a pro athlete?
It's that and carrying my 43-pound four-year-old around, which I really shouldn't be doing.
Right, right.
But I do. I'm, you know, I'm a little person.
5'2".
Yeah, I'm 5'2", and it's the first thing I hear. You're so tiny in person. I didn't realize you were so small.
Yeah, I get that a lot, too. I'm 6'4", so.
Okay.
Yeah. But, and you're a sushi freak, too, huh?
Yeah, we love sushi.
I just hooked into that. I was living in Australia for 5 years, and that's where I got introduced to the whole sushi scene, and I love it. But bad sushi is bad.
It's really bad,
right?
You know, we had a hard time finding sushi in Calgary when we lived there.
Yeah, okay.
Really hard.
It's like dead cattle everywhere, right? It's like steaks and beef, but no sushi.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get it. Candace Cameron Bury on the phone with us. Tell us the love story. I want to hear about how you and Valerie kind of connected, and did he propose? You know, how did he propose? I want to know give me the juice.
Okay, we were introduced by Dave Coulier, who was on Full House with me. He played Joey, because he's a big hockey fan, and Val was playing at a charity hockey game. So there were pros and celebrities, and that's where we were introduced, because Val and his brother Pavel used to watch Full House all the time when they came here from Russia.
Okay.
And it helped them to learn English.
Okay.
And so they were excited to meet us, and I was not a hockey fan at all, but he was cute, so I was like, hey, sure. But, you know, that was it. We actually exchanged phone numbers, and we talked on the phone for quite a few months before we ever saw each other again, because he was in Fredericton on Montreal's farm team.
Right.
And then we, you know, got to visit once the Full House ended, and we traveled for a year visiting each other, and then the next summer, we went to Europe and had like a horrible, horrible trip.
Why?
It was supposed to be for 10 days in Europe, and we came home after 4 because Val didn't have the right visas and holds the Russian passport. So we were like thrown in jail in Italy.
Oh, no way.
We were like thrown in the airport jail and had to wait 9 hours only for them to like send us back to Germany, and because he was could go there, and then we hopped on a flight to Paris. He was allowed to go there, and it was, you know, we got in a huge fight because all this horrible stuff was happening, and we were irritable. And then that night we got into Paris, we had dinner and we took a walk, and he sat me up on this little stoned wall and proposed to me.
Did he get down on the knee and all that stuff, or do you know?
He didn't, because I was up. He like
I got it.
Up on this wall, so he stood there and he was just so cute, telling me how much he loved me.
Do you remember the words he used? Like, did he say "so you wanna," or was he a little smoother than that?
I don't even remember.
Oh man, I'll bet you he doesn't either. So you're off the hook. I mean, really.
Hey, it's been almost 10 years or 11 years.
And how's the Russian? Can you lay a little Russian on us?
Я не говорю по-русски.
Hey, that's pretty, that sounds like it's right.
It's right, but I'm just saying I don't speak very much Russian.
Oh, okay.
That's about all I can say.
Oh, man. When you got married, I find the carrying the Bible down the aisle story interesting. All the women in the family carried, is it your grandma's little Bible?
Yeah, it's my mom's mom's Bible, and everyone in our family has carried that Bible, all of us girls, all my mom's sisters, and, you know, cousins, everyone. Whatever girl's been married, they've carried that Bible.
But it's a little Bible, right? It's not one of those big...
Yeah, it's like a pocket,
right.
Little,
right.
Small Bible.
Because that would look weird, you walking down with, like, an encyclopedia Bible.
Yeah, that would be weird.
That's just a little odd. Does Valerie share the same faith in Christ as you?
He does. He became a believer a couple years ago, and that was... after I finally stopped preaching at him.
Okay.
You know, because my life, when I really got on fire for God and understood the gospel, I was so excited about it and just wanted to learn everything. And in the midst of my excitement and sharing with Val, I would end up, you know, preaching at him. Not meaning to, but it started to become like, well, honey, you know, the Bible says this, and well, honey, you really shouldn't do that, and, you know, we really need to do this and that.
I'm getting the shivers just hearing that. You know, from a husband, like a guy's point of view, you know.
Yeah.
I've heard a lot of couples, a lot of mismatches isn't the right term, but what's the term? Unequally yoked, right?
Right.
Couples. And I've heard that these women who've just gone on and on and driven their husbands so far away, and I kind of shiver when I hear that stuff, so.
Well, yeah. I mean, I do too now, but I wasn't doing it consciously. I didn't realize.
No, you're just fired
up.
The
damage that I was doing. I was just excited, and I wanted him to understand and believe as, you know, much as I did. Until he finally said to me one time, like, stop it. I don't want to hear what you're saying and talking about. I'm happy for you, but, you know, you're so pushing me away from it. So if you even want me to know anything about God, then you need to just
back off.
Shut up.
Yeah. Good for him to say that. I mean,
yeah, I'm so glad that he did.
Yeah.
And I said, I was like, oh, okay. And we just had an understanding after that. He said, if I want to know something, I'll ask you. But unless I ask you, please don't talk to me about God and the Bible. And I said, okay. So I prayed for a couple years. I mean, every night he was just, that was my prayer. And I just, you know, when I would pray and talk to God, just said, help me to just live my life for you and to be the kind of wife that you want me to, and to help show Val Christ, but through my actions and not through my words. So after a few years, I noticed all these changes in Val, and, you know, little things like he would just never pick up a Bible storybook to read for the kids, and he wouldn't ever want to say prayers. He'd, you know, kiss them and tuck them in goodnight, but jam out before, you know, I would say prayers with them at bedtime and stuff like that. And then it was just a time when he started picking up the Bible storybooks to read to the kids, and he started encouraging them to say their prayers, and I'm like, you know, something's going on here. But I wasn't allowed to ask him, and I didn't want to blow it. So I'm like, I'm not even going to go there. But we were at our church. There was a baptism service out on the beach. And I said, you know, honey, I would really like to get baptized, because even though I had been baptized at 12, it really didn't mean what it should have meant.
Yeah. You want to own your own baptism, your own choice.
Exactly.
Yep.
And I said, I would really like to go get baptized. And I said, would you like to get baptized too? And we talked about it a bit, and he asked me, you know, why we get baptized. And I just said it was an act of obedience and a profession of your faith. And he said, yeah, I do.
Very cool.
And that was the first time I heard, because I knew it. It was for months that the guy was just a different guy. And I was so excited. So we went and got baptized together. Val actually baptized me.
Really?
Just an amazing, amazing day. Best day of my life, honestly.
Okay, I'm getting a little emotional here. That's cool. That is very cool stuff.
It was incredible. Yeah. It was the first time I ever heard him say a prayer out loud and told the pastor when he gave his life over to Christ. And they baptized him. And then they said, Val, you're the spiritual head of your household, so we'd like to have you pray over your wife and baptize her.
Wow.
I didn't even know that was coming, so it was, you know, it was just amazing. So Val is now, you know, a guy who never wanted to talk about it, and now, you know, he's known as the Christian guy in the NHL, and he's always got his sermons on tape or on his iPod when he's flying on the plane to different cities. So the guys know, if you're going to sit with Val, you're up for some Jesus conversation.
You're going to get the God stuff, yeah. Well, Candace, you've been just so great. Thank you so much for your time. I want to wrap up soon because I know you have a life.
Sure.
But I'm so enjoying chatting with you.
I'm having so much fun.
Well, good. I'm glad you are. And again, folks, we're on the phone with Candace Cameron Bure. And how do we explain you concisely? DJ from Full House, actress in a bunch of other TV movies, sister to Kirk Cameron, and wife to Valerie Bure. And really a hog when it comes to her mother's cookie recipe. She won't share. And I would just say to you about that, I would just say, what would Jesus do? Okay? You know what I mean? Now, when Valerie was growing up in Russia, I mean, they wouldn't have got any God stuff, right?
No, well, they kind of had that. They had the Russian Orthodox.
Orthodox.
Yeah, which is very similar to Catholicism, and they went to church, but they were, you know, on Easter and Christmas or New Year's. That's when they went to church, and he went a couple times a year, and that was about it for him.
Yeah. Well, that is such a cool story. Now, listen, down in L.A., have you met Peter Miller yet, the trainer?
Yes.
Okay.
I have.
He's a Jesus guy.
Yeah. Yeah, Val talks with him a lot. We have good conversations.
I'm involved with a place called Teen Ranch up just north of Toronto, and we have training camps for many of the NHL teams, and Peter Miller has been up a number of times to the ranch. So we have hockey camps and, you know, whatever else up there. So,
oh, cool.
How is your walk different than your brother's, than Kirk Cameron's? Would it be very similar? I mean, as I said before, Candace, he's known to be pretty spiritually intense, right?
Yeah. Well, in some areas I want to say it's similar, but I think my brother is much more, my brother's been walking, you know, a lot longer than I have. And I think he's much more comfortable, especially in evangelism.
Right.
Because let me tell you, you have to put all fear aside and really not care and put God in front of everything, like, so far. Because to go up to someone that you really don't know, and to talk about Christ with them, I think is one of the most fearful things you can do in your entire life.
Right.
And my brother just
does it.
He can do it.
Yeah.
He can do it. And I still struggle with that. If I'm having a conversation with someone, even that I don't know, but a private conversation, I can easily talk about God, talk about Jesus, and get into a spiritual conversation with them. Hmm. But to, you know, publicly stand on a soapbox and say, hey, can I have your attention, please?
Yeah, yeah.
That my brother can do, and I'm just not there yet.
No.
Know if I will be. You know, different ways work for different people.
Right. And that's what I was going to say is, I don't think necessarily it means that you're not there yet. You, as you said, you may never get there. It may not be how you're wired. And I think we need to acknowledge that we are wired differently. And personally, I'm not wired like that either. Now, I guess the term relationship evangelism has been thrown around a whole lot, but I'm not even into that anymore. I'm just into relationshiping. Matter of fact, I like hanging out with non-Jesus people a heck of a lot more than I do with Jesus people.
Yeah.
Because I just find there's just a truthfulness there. There's a, let's cut through the crap with a lot of people. And those are the kind of people I like hanging out with. And unfortunately, I've met so many Jesus people who still have the Breath Mint Sunday attitude, of facades and pretense.
Right. And that's where my husband, because I really love to share the gospel with people in a more intimate setting than, say, my brother
sure.
needs to have. But whereas my husband is the same way, he can talk about spiritual things with people, but he's a firm believer, and I want to live my life to show it. I don't necessarily need to have conversations with everyone.
Yep.
The biggest compliment to him was when we've had people come up to say us to and say, "There's just something about you guys that's just different. And you guys, you know, it's just enjoyable to be around you."
Yeah.
And
well,
it's like that's it. I just want to live it
sure.
so people see it.
Sure. And I think there's the baseball analogy here. You're the pitcher that has worked the 9 innings to get the game in the bag, and then Kirk comes in and closes it.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Okay, so as far as the future goes for you, how do I say this? What do you want to be when you grow up? You know, your mom in it, which is brilliant. I just have so much admiration for women that take the mothering thing seriously. And I know there's women out there that can't financially afford to just stay at home, so I'm not dissing that scenario,
right.
But you obviously can,
right?
And you've done it. You've chosen to stay at home and really focus on your family and your kids and your husband's career. I just think that man is so admirable.
Well, thanks. God did a really big work in me because I didn't always have that point of view and always wanted a career for myself because I've had one since I was 5, and understanding how important it is to be there for my husband and to be the best helper to my husband that I can possibly be is what, God wants for me. And it fulfills me so much in knowing that I'm pleasing him doing that
yeah.
and to stay at home and raise my kids. And, in the future, immediate future, it's going to be this because my children are young I want to concentrate on my family life because I think that's really what it's all about, according to the Bible. And as far as working and acting, I absolutely love doing it, but it just it's not where my life's at right now, and God hasn't really opened that door, or I haven't felt, the desire to go back into that at this time. And, I still just, I'm thankful to be able to use the platform that Full House has given me to talk to people about Christ and be able to speak at churches and, on radio programs and all that kind of stuff. And I'm like, hey, if that's all it ever is just the popularity from Full House, I'm so thankful and find it a privilege to be able to use it.
Very good. Very classy. Man, it has been such a treat to be able to talk with you. You seem like
a
pretty good good kid.
Thank you.
And it's got to be hard for you. People still thinking of you in the kid sense, they think of you from so long ago. And anyway, you seem like you're busting out of that shell quite nicely.
Well, thank you.
I do appreciate your time, Candace, and stay with us, folks. We'll be right back. A whole lot more on the Drew Marshall Show.
Like what you've heard? Listen again online at drewmarshall.ca.